You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey friends, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. Again, I'm Clint Clifton, and today we're going to hear a church planting story, a really great church planting story. It's about Hector and Alicia Medina. Hector and Alicia planted Salvo Por Gracia in Claremont, California, and they've got a really interesting backstory. And today, I have a chance to share a little of that with you.
We were broken, we were shattered, we were lost. I come from the street life, gang life background, and I think hated God, hated Christianity. My parents had been Christian since I was seven. I basically saw a God that didn't care for me, didn't accept me through my folks. It was till years later when I married my wife, had our firstborn, and we had a really bad relationship, and it just got worse.
We do so much work in church planting that we have no idea how it's going to turn out. It's like we put deposits into this bank, but we very rarely get to see the withdrawals. The famous Puritan pastor Charles Bridges said it like this. He said, "The seed of the gospel may lay under the sod until we do, and then spring up." We really have no idea what God is going to do with our efforts. Well, this next part of Hector and Alicia's story really reminds us that our investment in gospel work sometimes pays off in ways that we can't ask, think, or imagine.
One day when we were at the very peak of this very bad situation, we were arguing about separating, divorcing, and all these things. And someone knocked at our door and invited us to church. Didn't have a clue how they pulled up to the door. And I opened the door right in the middle of a heated argument about divorce, about just many negative things. And he's like, "Man, I'm just here to invite you to church. Here's the address." Give me a small little tiny paper with the address on it. And I was like, just surprised. And then I was like, "Yeah, whatever. Okay, here." And went back to my argument and just asked her if she wanted to go. And she was like, we were at the very end. So I think her thought was just more like, "Whatever, you know, let's go." That was that, and we went.
We have no idea what a simple invitation or an encouraging word might do to lift somebody's spirit or lighten somebody's day. If you're a church planter, you're going to knock on doors hundreds, if not thousands of times, and walk away from those doors thinking that didn't make any difference at all. It's so encouraging to hear that sometimes God uses our feeble efforts to do things that we don't even know about. In this next part of the story, you're going to hear about how a simple hug made a huge impact in Hector's life.
As we're getting close to the entrance, as soon as I saw them, I was like, "My gosh, I know what this is going to be about." There's usher there. His name is Gonzalo. Usher, old man, Hispanic, tie-in suit. Well, embraced me. He embraced me like a father. Mm. Like no one had ever embraced me in my life. Mm. And immediately impacted me, immediately made me uncomfortable in my personal space.
So when you say he embraced you, you don't mean metaphorically, you mean literally he hugged you?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Yes, he hugged me. He hugged me hard too, like he meant it. You know, it wasn't like just like I have to do this. It was more like I want to do this, like I'm glad.
And somehow that one moment like sticks with you really vividly.
Yes, because the life I had lived, of rejection, of being neglected by everyone, they saw who I was. So no one really wanted to do anything with me, you know, in life. Society, my family, school, everywhere I went, that was the life I lived. I thought I didn't care. Mm-hmm. But years later, I found out that I was hurt, you know, by that. And this man just exposed that, I guess, you know, in me as he hugged me and really hugged me hard and didn't let me go and was like, "I'm so glad that you're here. Would you come inside?" Made me very uncomfortable. Went inside. And that was that for me. That was that moment because I heard the worship and the sermon. But throughout that service, throughout that gathering, I was sweating. I was not comfortable because of the love of this man. Wow. And I was just asking myself, you know, kind of reviewing my life in a fast way as we were there, because I knew that by the end of that gathering, she was going to leave.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I had lost everything.
In all the circumstances of our life, God is at work, but we often don't realize it. Listen as Alicia shares about how God sustained her through the most difficult and tumultuous times in her marriage, and how God continued to give her hope and optimism in the face of so much difficulty.
I think I really had lost hope because we had been together since we were 11. I know it sounds crazy, but we've dated since we were little, young. Yeah. And so he hadn't changed.
Yeah.
Like, he had offered, please forgive me, I'll do A, B, C, and D. But the reality is, because Christ wasn't in the mix, it was just a fairy tale, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I loved him, so I took all his nonsense, honestly. Mm-hmm. And we walked there. I knew God could do something, but I just didn't know if he was willing to allow God to do something. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't willing to do that fight. I felt I was such a baby believer, mm-hmm. and I didn't have nobody to walk with me,
right,
to guide me or to tell me it's all going to be okay, mm-hmm. like, trust God. I just felt I knew God, but I was walking alone. There was no support or help. Mm-hmm. So for me, giving up was like the easiest, healthiest option for both of us before he would kill me or something. Because
yeah.
that's how aggressive it was. That's wow. how threatening he was to me and my daughter. Wow. So it was like, do I really want to stay in this situation? I have no support. I have no help. What do I do for me?
Wow.
And yes, God existed, but I didn't know how to navigate this God I really didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I knew he could. I just didn't know how he would.
I immediately knew in that process that I would serve Jesus. Just didn't know how. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I wanted to share my story mm-hmm. with people. And that's kind of how I started, going back to the community, the street, and sharing.
The change for Hector was so definitive that he knew at the moment he came to Christ that it would affect his life forever.
I would always neglect when people would tell me, you're going to be a pastor. I'm mm-hmm. like, no, I'm not. I don't want to be that. I don't want to do that. It's, you know, I want to serve, but I don't want to do that. And so it was always in the radar. I was always just pushing it back. Deep inside, I think I was like, man, is this the reality? You know, is this where I'm headed? But
yeah.
always just kind of, yeah, left it on the back burner.
Yeah.
But as our ministry really kind of, in a sense, blew up with young adults,
yeah.
Hispanic young adults, we began a ministry called Good Life, the Good Life Crew. And God just was doing amazing things in young adults. And we were just loving them, shepherding them. And at that moment, I think it's when I kind of started just embracing maybe a little bit more that idea of maybe that's where we were headed.
It's one thing to surrender yourself to say, I'm going to serve the Lord with my whole heart for the rest of my days. It's another thing to have a more specific calling to pastor and plant a church. Listen to the ways that God unfolded that part of the story to Hector.
Our pastor told him, you're going to start a Bible study, like you. It wasn't a let's train you. It wasn't a nothing, like I would think, right? I think that's something I would do now. You are going to start a Bible study with young adults this day at this place with nobody, because there was nobody. He said yes. Though he knew nothing, he said yes. He showed up with two people because there was two young adults. And that is when the explosion of the growth in the young adults began. And I saw it's really his obedience to the call that it's going to make way to whatever God has
yeah.
for us. But then, and then that just grew. And I just saw his leadership, his love for the kids.
Yeah.
The young people. And it was so awesome to see. I wasn't working in the ministry yet. I was just supporting him.
Yeah.
I was working with the women, young women. And then I was like, God, you are doing something here, because
yeah.
this group of two people started expanding and growing and multiplying. And it was just so awesome to
yeah.
witness nothing and become something, you
right.
know? And so then I joined him, and then it just went from there.
Go back to that day when you guys are arguing in the living room before the knock on the door. And I'm just wondering if somebody would have paused you right then and said, Alisa, 10 years from now, you guys are going to be happily married and
your husband's going to be a pastor and leading a church. Like, what would you have said in that moment? How crazy would that have been to you?
I would have been absolute. It's not happening. 100%
sure.
There is no way on earth.
Yeah.
He would be a pastor. Like, no way. I'm more loving and caring, so maybe.
Maybe you would be a pastor's
maybe,
wife.
Maybe, yes. Pastor's wife.
But you'd have a different husband.
There is absolutely 100% that no way on earth he would ever love anyone else.
Mm.
Truth. I believe that he loved me, and maybe that's why he was a little bit more caring towards me, but there was no love and connection with him and people.
Mm.
None. People wouldn't approach me because of him.
Yeah.
Like, literally, even when we started coming to church, the reality was because of his features and appearance and his... People wouldn't come to me at all.
I imagine people in the neighborhood knew you, right?
Yeah. And so they put, you know, a wall because I they must assume I should be just like him. I don't know. And so that's really how our life was. And I really had to work so hard to build relationships with people because, well, I had to walk with him. You know, he was my husband.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, never, ever did I ever think he would even love people.
These days, we have incredible systems and structures for pastoral ministry preparation and for church planter training. But the truth is, before any of that existed, God was calling people to plant new churches, and he was preparing him for that work. Hector and Alicia's story is not a story of a lot of preparation that led to them being equipped, that led to them going out and planting. It was a story where God began to work in them, and they, with obedience, stepped one step right in front of the other, and eventually God prepared them and equipped them for the work. That's similar to my own story. I wasn't equipped for the ministry that I had in front of me, and I faced lots of difficulties because of that. But God and his Spirit sustained me every step of the way. So it's good that we have so many resources at our disposal today, but the first and best resource we have is the Spirit of God as he calls us and we step in the direction of his calling.
I had a season in my life where even now in ministry, shifted from my focus being Jesus to ministry, I think, and I hit this area where just kind of lost my sense of relationship with Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know what the best way to say it, but I kind of relapsed into, like, still going to church, but I stopped serving.
Uh-huh.
I stopped serving. I put my eyes on things and people, and I kind of opened my eyes to the reality of ministry, and it affected me, and I saw injustice, and I saw these things, and so I go through a year and a half of this process where I'm really hurt, I'm really damaged now within ministry, and now she's fighting for me, for my life, and prayer, and all these things, and finally, a year and a half later, I surrender my life again, and I said, Jesus, I need you, you know. I need to love you, not ministry. And so I hit that area. After that, I think that was the final piece at that moment for my journey or my part of the season that I needed. I needed to be humbled to enter this church planting because I was still dealing with that humble part of being humble. And I think God was like, man, you can't enter this like this, you know. So
yeah.
I went through that season, come out of it, restored, renewed. And that was 2013. Towards the end of 2013, 2014, we plant out of our garage. The way our culture plants sometimes is like just believing and
not a lot of strategy.
Not a lot of strategy, not a lot of planning, not a lot of, and we just go out there and say, here I am, but then you deal with the rest, and kind of that's how our situation was. I remember having two huge DJ speakers, and I was like, this is all I need to start. Hispanics usually have these huge speakers, and we had that, and we started in 2014, and yes, it was awesome, and God was doing things, but we also, throughout time, started experiencing the lack of, the results of lack of planning, the results of lack of mentorship, someone walking with us and with me on the pastoral side, and it began to take a toll in our life.
Like a lot of church planting couples, Hector and Alicia faced some tremendous difficulty in their church planting journey. Just because God calls us to something and sends us out to do it doesn't at all mean that it's going to go smoothly every step of the way. And Hector and Alicia faced some dark days even after their obedience to Christ. I often call this church planter postpartum depression. I notice it in church planters all across the board, and it was certainly true in my life. There's optimism and encouragement when you set out to start a new church, but then the realities and the difficulties of leading people and shepherding God's church and facing the difficulty of planting a church in a community that doesn't really want a new church, all of those things begin to weigh on you. And if you don't have proper support and encouragement around you, it can become pretty dark. There are sometimes when church planting feels like taking two steps forward and then another two steps back. It just feels like you're making no headway or progress. Hector and Alicia had a season like that in their own ministry, where they got to a point where they realized that the work they had done had been built on an unstable foundation. They began to feel like they needed to back up and restart the church.
We've experienced enough to know that it was unhealthy, that Hispanic church planting could not be modeled like that, could not be lived like that, and that we, if we ever had an aspiration to change it or to be a part of something different, we needed to pull the plug and we needed to do something different ourselves.
Yeah.
And it was a very hard moment, very hard season, because also you feel like a failure, or you feel like, you know, something happened. But it was the best, honestly now, it was the best decision we could have made.
One of the primary reasons church planters quit is because of isolation. Every time I sit down with a church planter who's gone through difficulty and thrown in the towel, they cite isolation or loneliness or feeling like they're on an island as one of the primary reasons. Hector and Alicia were no different. Hector and Alicia were extended an invitation to be a part of a church planting family. The Send Network in their region reached out to them and offered opportunities for them to be involved. They patiently invited them to event after event after event. But Hector and Alicia were hesitant.
It was too good to be true.
Yeah.
That was the main factor that I always neglected Send Network, because I was like, these guys are, it's too good to be, no one lives this. There's no way you would care for me. There's no way you would give me resources. There's no way you would provide. There's no way you would walk with me.
Yeah.
There has to be something. And then even my street background, my Hispanic background would kick in and be like, no, there's something behind this. There's something behind this. There's a catch to this. Or then that was it. And it was crazy that he would keep trying to love me. I would meet with him. He changed my life. He started walking with me, started mentoring me. And I was loving it, but at the same time, I was just aware and I was alert. I said, man, you know, one of these days, one of these months, the real deal is going to come out, and I need to be ready for that. I kept going to care events. He kept inviting me to care events, and I would see the care and the love, and I was like, these guys live
in planter care events.
Yeah, fairy tale, you know, like, what's the catch here? Well, one of the things, too, that I guess is probably funny, I didn't want to do was paperwork. I didn't want to go through assessments. My mindset at the time was like, you're already seeing the work I'm doing. Why do I need to go through? Anyway, it's just all these things, right? Yeah. But finally, all that took me to a place where I said, I need help. I know God's called me. I just don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, if there would be a way that someone would come alongside me.
Church planting is a team sport, and if you're married to a church planter, you have to dedicate yourself to being willing to encourage them when things are not going well. Listen to Alicia. She explains how she encouraged her husband Hector during their darkest days.
You know what? I just loved him well.
Mm-hmm.
I cared for him.
Mm-hmm.
I would see what's going on because it's visible, but I couldn't allow myself to fall with him because then we would both just end up worse than when we started. I kept doing the things that I knew kept me going, seeking Jesus, journaling, like doing me.
Yeah.
Staying strong as a woman, as a wife, and allowing God to help me love him. Because I didn't like what he was going through. Like, I didn't like what I was seeing. Like, he was going back to that anger, resentment, bitterness. Yeah. And so we live together, and so you breathe that. So it's such a battle to help him get out from this, especially when he didn't want to. And I get it, and I would understand, but I kept showing up, and all I asked God was to help me love him and care for him, even when I don't agree with his behavior.
Yeah.
I said, God, help me love him.
I often think of church planting like a sheet of plywood with a bunch of layers. Probably you've seen a 3/4-inch sheet of plywood. It has 5 or 6 layers. The grain on each layer is going a different direction, and they've been glued together and pressed hard so that they make one solid piece of wood. And the church plant is a lot like that piece of plywood. If the church planter has layers of help and support, if all those layers exist, the church plant is a lot stronger. It's a lot more likely to make it through the darkest days of church planting. It's a lot more likely to make it through church planter postpartum. So let me encourage you, aspiring church planters, before setting out to start a new church, make sure your spouse is totally on board. Make sure you have a great church planting network, and make sure your team is strong enough to support you through the difficulties of church planting. Church planting is a difficult and dangerous sport, but it's worth it in the end, as God uses us to establish churches that become rooted in our community and proclaim the gospel of Jesus to others for generations.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.